Skeet Ulrich is a longtime actor who was here in Austin. Skeet Ulrich is a longtime actor who is here in Austin this weekend, taking part in the festivities for NASCAR out at the Circuit of the Americas, the Echo Park Automotive Grand Prix. He's serving as the honorary pace car driver prior to the race on Sunday. He also has what looks like an outstanding new series coming out on AMC. It is called Parrish, and it stars Giancarlo Esposito from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul fame. Skeet is a part of the cast, plenty of others as well. We're going to learn about that and his crazy NASCAR past, believe it or not. And now my conversation with Skeet Ulrich. So you are in Austin. How are things going for you so far, man?
Very good. We got in yesterday. We had the premiere of the new show Wednesday night in LA, and then we're out here to enjoy some NASCAR. I've got a lot of family, obviously. I'm sure you heard in the sport and over the years, and so it's good to have family come in, my kids, and also get to represent a show that I love and a sport that I love. So,
oh, you get to make it a family affair this weekend. That's
Yeah.
There's so much to get into with Parrish, which does premiere very soon for the general public on FX, and then, AMC, and AMC. Can be seen on Hulu immediately as well. And then also what you're doing in NASCAR this weekend. So you see that somebody is driving the honorary pace car for a NASCAR event. You're like, oh, that's cool that this person is getting to do this, but that's not where it begins and ends for you, as you just alluded to. Now, I can take Wikipedia at face value and see that you've got some serious NASCAR connections in the past, but for anybody who's unfamiliar, just how ingrained were you in the NASCAR lifestyle as a kid based on family members and strong male role models in your life?
Just to summarize it maybe in a unique way, I got on a Ferris wheel at the Cabarrus County Fair near Charlotte Motor Speedway at, I believe I was 11 or 12 years old, felt dizzy. And the man beside me who took me on this ride was Tim Richmond. And he began screaming at the guy, "Let us off, let us off." He was like a protector to my brother and I. DK Ulrich, who is my stepdad, ran many years in the sport and owned teams for many years after that, and brought Ernie Irvin in, brought Tim Richmond in. Ricky Rudd is obviously my uncle. So I spent a lot of time around, Earnhardt and Richard Petty and Ricky and sort of the legendary NASCAR drivers. It was amazing. It's such a family. I'm not as enmeshed as I once was, but from looking in, knowing Chad Knaus, from our relationships through the years, from Jimmy and everything, it's always been a family sport and continues to be a family sport. And it's beautiful in that way. It's a traveling circus.
When you're a kid like that, you don't realize that you're amidst these legends. So obviously the Ferris wheel story is a great one. Like, do you have a fondest memory from just hanging around the sport though, when you were a kid? So considering that you were around it a lot of weekends when these races are going on.
Yeah. I mean, we were sort of, at that time you qualified on Wednesday. So you got a lot of tracks, that weren't near to Concord, Rockingham, obviously, North Wilkesboro, stuff around that. That was a day trip, but everything else was, family leaving on Tuesday, getting back on Monday. So you either went or you were alone. And my brother and I were often alone, but we often went. And I had a heart problem when I was 10. I had to have open heart surgery. And the week before I went to go in for the surgery was the Talladega race. And we went down for the Talladega race. And I guess word got around to everybody through DK and Ricky that, what was going on. And it was going to be a tough surgery, this or that. And so, Earnhardt, especially pampered me, stuck me up. He picked me up at one point, put me on top of the roof of the garage in Talladega. And, they just treated me like a king. I was in the driver's meeting and the king himself. It was a bank of payphones. I was sitting along and somehow he got the number to the one I was at, and they rang, and DK was like, pick it up. And I picked it up, and it was the King, and he was like, you're going to be just fine. You're going to make it. Don't worry about it. You know, he's just so sweet.
Wow.
And I had a lot of times with some extraordinary people, but those two legends, yeah, were of particular interest that weekend.
Gosh, I don't want to talk too much about this, but open heart surgery at such a young age. I've got a good friend of mine who went through testicular cancer when he was a teenager, and it was so important for him as a character builder and something that built a resilience and a perspective that not a lot of kids or adults even have, having to go through something so serious. Obviously, it's very scary for you as a kid, not knowing one way or the other, but how important was that moment in who you are today?
Oh man, I think it kind of defined so much, you know, everything down to career, you know, I was like many, many kids, wanted to be a pro baseball player, and that was my jam. And, you know, and then, you know, the fear of getting hit by a baseball, you know, from a, you know, pitch in the chest, we called it my Dolly Parton in Little League, but I had a catcher's chest protector cut up, and they would ace bandage it in front of my sternum, you know, in case I did get hit. But yeah, it ingrained the spirit, so I couldn't hit, you know, scared to stay in there and hit.
Yeah.
So in a way, I know, you know, there's so few of us that go on to be Major League Baseball players, but in a way that sort of changed a trajectory right there. And you know, I started finding other things that interested me, like acting. So yeah, it kind of defines everything. And you're right, in terms of being a human being, I mean I felt invincible, you know, most of my life, and still in a little bit of ways I do at 54 still feel, you know, invincible, that I've beaten death. So I know what you mean. I know what your friend means. Yeah, it does give you a resiliency and a strength and a scale of what's major and what's not.
Yeah,
and I don't mean just medically, you know, but yeah,
very important perspective. So did that keep you from ever getting behind the wheel yourself to race, just because of the concern with the steering wheel maybe hitting you there?
No, that wasn't it at all. I mean, it was everybody was really busy. You know, there wasn't a lot of money to be made in NASCAR at that point in the, you know, early 80s. So it wasn't like, you know, we had a ton of money to even, or time for me to even start a go-kart, you know, career, if you will, or somewhere to start, you know, your driving career. I mean, we had dirt bikes, we'd ride them all around. We lived off DeRider Road, which is now like Hendrick Lane, you know, where it's every industrial thing to do with NASCAR, but it was, you know, a couple of miles from the speedway. You rode dirt bikes all over out there, but no money, no time to really, you know, invest in bringing along me as a driver or anything. I would have loved it. According to Ricky, I have some skills. So,
oh, really?
I'll take that. But I got to hand it down to my son. My son was doing bandoleros at 8. He was doing 110 and bandos at, you know, 8 years old, 9 years old. And
damn.
And he had he ran 7 seasons, and then, you know, you hit a price point that just becomes a bit unmanageable. You know, I do okay, but I'm not, you know, I'm not going to be able to support a race team. So, yeah.
A good way to put it. So you have served as a Grand Marshal previously at a NASCAR race. Is this going to be your first time to get behind the wheel of the honorary pace car?
Absolutely. I'm not even sure what to expect. I mean, my brother, you know, he works for the company that runs 9 of these tracks and Speedway Motorsports. When he talked about it, it sounded like I was driving the pace car the entire race. And I was like, man, that's a bit nerve wracking. I don't know about that. It can't be it. He's like, I think so. And I was like, bro, I don't think so. So I think we're like, you know, doing a couple laps ahead of the pace car, but and then we'll peel off and let him have at it. But it's exciting. You know, it's really, I can't tell you, like, I mean, my mom started one of the first PR firms in this business, and she worked at Charlotte Motor Speedway for years, doing everything from bringing in, you know, sponsorships to the pre-race stuff, to all the different things they did to try and generate fandom, et cetera. You know, she was responsible for. And so I've had moments where I sat in between the grid as they rolled off pit road, you know, and Ricky waves out the window at me. And like, you know, I've had some really cool moments like that. And, but this one, I, you know, it's so cool to get to come back in this way to a sport that I've spent generations around and in a role and in a show that I can't speak highly enough about. And my experience with Giancarlo Esposito and AMC in general and this material and this show, I mean, I'm blessed. I am a blessed man to have family around me while I'm doing it. It's a highlight.
Yeah, everybody knows Giancarlo from Breaking Bad, of course, and Better Call Saul. He actually looks a lot like the Longhorn men's basketball coach, believe it or not, a guy named Rodney Terry. Look that up after the fact.
I will check it out.
You'll get a chuckle out of that. And let Giancarlo know that too, please, because that's been a running joke ever since Rodney Terry started coaching here a few years ago or came back to
coach. I will let him know. Absolutely.
But this show Parrish looks incredible. Everybody knows about Giancarlo and his acting chops. I hope people aren't sleeping on what you're going to be able to bring to the show, too. You said in a previous interview, or probably a couple of previous interviews, if we're being honest, that your character is towing that line and sometimes not so well between problem causing, let's say, and then also fun, too. Is it difficult to get to play those two sides on screen like that?
It's incredible. You know, I always have liked, I remember really being such a big fan of Gary Oldman and Viggo Mortensen in my 20s, you know, and the virility and the tension that they brought to scenes and to characters. And it's, you know, that edge, staying on that edge, but this guy's like got a heart of gold, but he's just keeps messing up and keeps messing up. And so, yeah, I had, you know, put that on the front of my script. His name's Colin, the character. Does Colin bring trouble or does he bring fun? And it's obviously both. You got to do both. So it was an extraordinary experience. He's a Cajun, which is a lot of fun to work with that accent. I had done it one other time. And this one, I got to elaborate a little more on it. And that just is a whole sing-song amount of fun that, I can't even explain. But yeah, it's an incredible show about a guy who's suffering from so much grief at the loss of his son a year prior to the story starting, a 19-year-old that was murdered in New Orleans, and story all takes place in New Orleans. And, you know, subsequent to that, his grief sort of overwhelms his ability to run his business. His family's falling apart. They are going to have to sell the house. His daughter's at odds with him. Everything's falling apart. And then an old friend shows up who they had done a lot of crimes together. And this guy went away for 17 years for him and never ratted him out. And that's me. And now his life's on the line and he needs his help. And they get into some stuff. So they get in deep.
That sounds exciting. That sounds really exciting. Yeah. I can't wait to hear you do the Cajun accent again, too. I know you've said that when you got into acting, that you had to kick a Southern accent because you grew up in Virginia or North Carolina, technically, that you were?
Both, mainly North Carolina, but I was born in Virginia.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, you grew up in the South and you had to kick that Southern accent to make it as an actor.
Yeah.
What did you go back to make sure to get the Cajun accent right? Are we going back and watching season one of True Detective, or is there something else going on there?
It's funny because I couldn't really find anybody that was doing what I wanted to do. I couldn't find the accent anywhere. The one thing that was closest is that that Cajun catfish cook dude. I can't remember his name. He's a YouTube sensation.
I know who you're talking about. I'm gonna have to look.
Yeah, and I wish I could remember his name, but I saw that a little bit, and it's close to that. I mean, the character had done 17 years in Angola, which is the toughest prison in the U.S.
Oh yeah,
and it's a 90% Black population. So I wanted to sort of figure out, how did this guy survive that, you know, and so it was sort of a mix of Cajun and what it may have sounded like in Angola that I was after. And so that was kind of unique. And but the basics of it are there. And I had lots of people coming to me on set who are obviously from there, shooting in New Orleans, saying, "Oh my God, you sound just like my family, or just like, you know, my uncle, or this or that." And But yeah, I paid a lot of money to go to NYU and lose accents like that, only to like be asked to do them again.
That's very but, high praise coming from people in the DeBoot, the Bayou State. I was there at the start of this year for the Longhorns football game against Washington. Man, that city is so unique in so many ways, and it is very easy. You understand why people may be walking around with 5 to 10 extra pounds, because there is so much delicious food, but it's also extremely decadent as well.
I gained 10 pounds over the 5 months we were shooting there. It was easy to do. I could have easily put on 20.
Yeah, exactly.
So much good food. Yeah.
You got to catch yourself at a certain point. It's like that freshman 15 that first year in college. The freshman 15, first 6 months of living in New Orleans. So one other interesting aspect about your story, Skeet, and something that led to you acting as well, as a sort of passion for building. You were building tree houses with a friend, and you were actually a set builder, which led to you realizing this passion for acting. I'm curious, in modern times, is there something that you've just built or something that you're currently in the process of building that you're especially proud of or has your attention?
Oh my God. Yeah. I've been building, I build a lot of, well, I shouldn't say a lot. I'm not prolific because I have a lot of other things going on, but when I do get time, and the strike allowed quite a bit of time for building recently. And I'm building a credenza, like an 8 foot long mid-century low credenza for my daughter's apartment now, which is all walnut. And I'm probably a week from finishing it. I don't know how much you'll be able to see of that. Like,
oh my God, that looks awesome.
Yeah, they're cool. This is all like box joints. See if you can see that.
Oh, look at that. Yeah, that's beautiful detail there.
Yeah. So I got to build the doors for it and put the finish on it and stuff like that. I've built some stuff recently for my son, some side tables for his apartment, for his sofa. That was a lot of fun. I used live edge walnut, which I'd never used live edge before. And I had a bunch of Santos mahogany left over from a current other projects I had built that I used to make the bases and stuff like that. So it's been fun. It's just something I love so much. You know, in film, it's a very collaborative effort at its best. And it's, but we show up, we hand over our ideas and our presentation of the story, our part of the story, and then it's not ours anymore. And it becomes how the story gets shaped by the director and by the producers. And that's okay. I mean, and you want it that way. But it's, in furniture building, I get there from design to completion. It's mine. And if I mess it up, I mess it up. If I make a great piece, I completed my vision. But it's just been a nice, something so interesting to me. And I build what's called heirloom quality furniture. There's no metal in them other than the hinges or something, but there's no, it's all joinery based.
So it's all woodwork then?
It's all woodwork. Yeah.
Sounds like you and Nick Offerman need to do
I know,
together.
People say
if nothing else, so you guys can talk shop.
I know. And I think we live near each other too, from what I hear. So yeah, maybe one day we'll meet. Yeah.
All right. So we have just another couple minutes left, Skeet. I'd really do appreciate the time today. We're going to finish with this question now, because I really enjoy having these sorts of conversations to discover a deeper side to people. And you strike me as a very thoughtful dude from the interviews that I've listened to you do, long form and otherwise. Smart people, accomplished people tend to ask themselves questions. And at a given time, there's generally one overriding question that is top of mind. For you right now, as somebody who's bright and accomplished, is there that one question? If so, what is it?
The one question that I ask myself lots.
That you're asking yourself right now more than any other question, let's say.
Yeah, I think, I think it's a, for me at the moment, it's career based. Like, it's a tough career. It's a tough business to maintain. I've been in it 30 some years now. And I wonder if there's a future. I always, wonder, do I still have a future in this, business? And I say that as I have a show coming out, but like, you just don't know. Things are changing so rapidly, and it's a performer thing, you know. I mean, you want to be doing your best stuff, you know. I don't want to just get by. Doesn't interest me, you know. So I ask myself lots, you know, what can I be doing? How can I be bettering myself? How can I, you know, stay on point so that I don't lose something I've worked 33 years for, longer for. So yeah, that's on my mind a lot lately.
Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for serving as the honorary pace car driver at the NASCAR race this weekend. Can't wait to see that. Giancarlo's going to be out there as well, serving as the Grand Marshal. And you guys star in what looks like an awesome new series on AMC Parish. It premieres next week. So everybody stay tuned. You're going to have an opportunity to watch episode one. And you got to wait week to week, like old school television.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's worth it.
Really enjoyed the conversation today, man. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you, man. Thank you for your thoughtfulness. And it was a lot of fun and a lot deeper than one sort of thinks when you go, oh, an ESPN interview. Like, you know, I know it's more than that. So thank you. It obviously is. I appreciate you and what you do. And thanks for, you know, getting our show out there.
Thank you to Gentleman Jesus for the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at gentlemanjesus.com. Thanks to you for hanging out. For more of the show and to connect on social media, visit booksonpod.com. Talk to you next time on Books on Pod.